-3 is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older.
-3 with Dave Dameshek.
Oh, yeah, sports fans. Hi and hello and welcome to -3 presented as ever by Omaha. Welcome to the weekend, a sports weekend supreme. Close enough anyway, depending on when you're listening to us. Speaking of which, Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, go to Twitter, X, or whatever it's called. There you will find the NFL 15-minute pregame show. We appreciate everybody who's watched it so far, has shared the good word. You can watch it on YouTube. Go to the Extra Points channel there, subscribe to that, and you'll be right as rain. Let's say hello now as we jump into the weekend to our pals. First of all, there's Eddie Spaghetti behind the glass, excited on this Thursday to watch former Pittsburgh Penguin, almost hero legend Louis Domingue, between the pipes for his rags, the team that he almost vanquished in the playoffs a couple of years ago. And there he is, sitting high atop show business. Speaking of right as rain, he's ready to write because that strike is over. And so too is the actor strike. We appreciate him making some time for us here. Busy as he is. It's Kevin Hench. What's the poop, fella?
Oh, man. I'm so happy the actor strike is over, obviously. But it was wild. So the second season of the Santa Claus reboot on Disney Plus premiered Tuesday night at midnight. And so we had like what was going to be the premiere, but no actors were allowed to go do it. So it was a press mixer with nobody they want to talk to. So instead of like it being Tim Allen and Gabriel Iglesias and Tracy Morgan and Eric Stone Street, it was me and my buddy Jack. Like, the press doesn't even want to say hi to us. It's like, I don't blame them. Like it's a premiere with no stars. So
can I tell you something? And I mean this sincerely, with the possible exception of Tracy Morgan, who might be in the top three funniest people of all time at the height of his powers, just being in his midst. It didn't make a difference what words came out of his mouth. He just is intrinsically funny. He's one of those people, has that weird gift. I think I'd rather talk to you. And what's great is, and I really do appreciate those of you who slip into my DMs or drop me a line, pals of mine across Sports America. My friend Brett, as a for instance, he's a regular listener. He said he listened to the most recent episode, and it was a good one. We had our pals, the Dutch Mook and John Hamm, on to talk about the latest fantasy football melodrama in our league. We'll get to that in a second. But he said, enjoyed the episode, but I got to say, I always enjoy the episodes with Hench even more. And that's a recurring theme here. People enjoy hearing Hench lose his mind. It's kind of fun.
Check out Brett with the big brain.
Well, listen, the thing is, it's sort of like, you know, did you ever see that Nick Nolte movie?
Got to be more specific.
Now I can't think of the name of it, where he's in the snowy small town and he's
Affliction.
It's basically, you know,
you ask for this obscure Nick Nolte movie, you get very little description. I say Affliction and then I go, no, I've never seen it. But that is like, last night Sophie was cooking and my 16-year-old loves to cook. This is the greatest development in my family.
Oh, yeah.
She's good at it. And this is awesome. But so she likes
going to be bad news for her in 2 years when you don't let her go to college. Well, what's the old man going to do? Old man's got to eat, don't he?
By the way, I'm already banking those savings. I'm praying she doesn't go to college. But so she likes to listen to very eclectic music when she cooks. And then I say to her, I go, what is this, Tribe Called Quest? And she's like, how do you know that? And it's like, I don't really know how I know stuff. Mostly it's just my memory. Until we got to the Corey Dillon, AJ Dillon fiasco, my memory was working really well. But anyway, so Nick Nolte, Toothache, Affliction.
Well, you know, to kind of tie it to, I guess, our fantasy football league a little bit, like my ongoing, I tell everybody this, and yet people ignore it. I love conflict. I like when people go at each other. The trick is, don't make me one of the parties involved, because then I really don't like it. I'm a delicate flower. So I don't like that. Similarly, it's fun for me kind of as a listener to Hench, I'm not involved in the conflict, one man against sanity. And like Nick Nolte in Affliction, what you realize at the end is like, oh, there was nothing going on. He just was losing his mind. That's you. And in fact, there's some pictures of you when your hair really gets wild where you look like that Nick Nolte mugshot. And you're both Hollywood heavyweights. You have a lot in common now that I think
about it. Down and out in Beverly Hills. It's crazy. Like, so there's this thing in politics where they like the advice is like, run on popularism. Find out what's popular and go, that's my thing. That's my thing. So as deranged as I am, because my issue is NFL officiating sucks, I've got a 99% approval rating.
That's so true. You're right.
Because who's going to push back? Who's going to go, I think they're doing a great job this year. Like it's the biggest layup. I just, because every, by the way, it's also funny. Like every week we talk about how bad the NFL officiating is. And then they take it like, oh, you want to see how bad it could be? Right. You know, like the rough and the passer calls get worse somehow week to week. And then like, which game was it? Oh, it was your Steelers, right? It was Steelers Thursday night where they just said, we call a penalty on every play if you want. You want us to call a penalty? Like, wasn't the Titans' first drive? Like, it was like four first downs by a penalty. Like,
well, yeah, that's how it started. And am I right that am I thinking of that? Was that the game where Al Michaels said, like, there's a flag on the field? Of course there is. I mean, talk about a guy who's maybe not losing his mind, but is just over it. It's just, this sucks, but I'm not going to leave and shame the devil. Yeah, it's wild stuff that, you know, we don't accept it, but there is no solve from our side of things. And you're right. It's as though the officials, and it's not just the NFL, are sort of taking it as a challenge, as though, like, you ever play one-on-one with a guy who played college ball? Like, I remember once, who was I?
I did play one-on-one with a guy who played college ball. His name was Mike Crotty. And he was the starting point guard for Dartmouth. You might remember his brother, John Crotty,
sure,
who played in the NBA.
Right.
The fun part about my story is I beat the starting point guard for Dartmouth in a game.
Wow. Is that a true story?
That's a true story. That's a true story.
Okay. I might not be able to help myself based on my earlier point about enjoying and, in fact, stoking conflicts that don't involve me. I might have to drop that guy a line to ask him.
Let's get Mike Crotty on the pod. See if you remember.
I like that.
Not as physically imposing as his brother John, but my greatest one.
That's still pretty bad. We're not just celebrating you. I once, as an empath and as a Steelers supporter, I once thought in the offseason to keep at that point the shutdown corner for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Ike Taylor. I wanted him to be mentally sharp. I didn't want him to get off his game. So I put on an AJ Green jersey. And I played him. We did a free throw shooting contest. Damashek destroyed him, but good. And I felt bad about doing it in hindsight. Now, okay, that's my greatest sports achievement. Back to you.
All right. Well, this is
he was a pro athlete, and I beat him in a sports competition.
You know,
that's pretty good.
You played basketball with me, so you kind of like you know, right? But Sully McCullough. All right, Sully McCullough was a
bigger ego than Giannis has. It's wild. You know.
Well, Sully McCullough was a pretty successful stand-up, and we were all at Rick Messina's house. So Rick Messina manages Tim Allen. He manages Drew Carey. Done very well for himself, obviously. And he had a big mansion in Encino with a basketball court. So, you know, all the flunky comics come up to the house to, you know, get high and watch football. And then, you know, I just want to play hoop. It was very similar to our Blue Top situation at Corolla's. And so then, and I'm not saying a word about my abilities. I'm just like, you know, hey man, I love basketball. Sully McCullough is like, he's like basically saying I'm great at basketball. And I, you know, and I'm like, oh, let's play one-on-one. And then he's assuming he's going to destroy me. Now, one-on-one is obviously not my game because I'm short, but he was shorter than I am. Like, my only problem in one-on-one is if you have a lot of length. So then, but he's little. And I'm like, oh, you're in trouble, man. Like, if you can't like contest my shot. Anyway, I beat him 21-0. And
the hell does Sully? I mean, that was a lesser story. You beat a guy who played Division One ball in one-on-one. Who cares about what Sully McCullough did? The little comic.
Well, because Mike Crotty scored on me. So it was anyway.
I got you. Well, I mean, I don't know. Damashek doesn't have, you know, rare length, but he's got the savvy. Well, he's got the cunning of a mongoose. Look, and he would do pinch often. You know what you couldn't handle? It was sort of like when Balboa went away from Southpaw a little bit and it threw Creed off in their second go round. Everybody remembers that. I think Hench struggled with Damashek's southpawedness. Like you would go by me because I wasn't quick enough. But in fact, it was my slowness that threw you off. My left-handedness and my slowness. Like you're like, well, I got by that guy, but I was just starting to make my defensive move when you thought, oh, it's over for him. Like I was just and I would block your shot fairly regularly.
He's not wrong. You definitely have deceptive length. You have that Bill Russell left-handed thing. What was wild though is like Carolla also left-handed longer than you. Never blocked my shot.
Well, because he doesn't leave his feet. If you watch him, he never leaves his feet playing basketball. Listen,
people don't want to hear us talk about our basketball careers. They want to hear us talk about our fantasy football league.
And let's get to it then with our golden goat of the week, spanning the full spectrum of sportsedness. Goat, greatest of all time, or goat, the one who you blame. Hench, start us off. By the way, shout out, Eddie Spaghetti, who are you wearing today? Hench is wearing a Bengal. I'm wearing a panther. Can we go all feline here?
No, I'm a terrier. It's a dog for Boston
Cats
University.
And dogs. Yeah. Cats and dogs.
All right. Go ahead there, Hench. Take it away. Let me squeeze in a quick break here. Let me ask you a question, Eddie Spaghetti. Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? But before you answer, two words, Caesars Rewards. Those are the two words. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. I'm talking about hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, even more than just that. It's not only an app, it's an empire. 21 plus must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER or Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, so
talk about the Cats, the Cool Cats, the name of my fantasy football team.
Well, it's no surprise to our listeners that you've lost your mind. Like you've come completely untethered. Okay, so how long ago was the was the Todd Gurley fiasco in our league?
How many? I don't know, but Tall John and Jamie, the team who made that deal with you, somehow misinterpreted me.
I wasn't in the deal.
Wait, you were not in the Gurley deal? No. 2 years ago?
So what happened, it was exact. This is why I've kept my powder completely dry on the latest controversy. So I was in the Bill Simmons position on the Todd Gurley trade for Sony Michel and David Johnson. So,
okay.
Bar Owls were out of it, and Tall John and Jamie swooped in like vultures, like you were accused of, frankly, of going to a team that's out of it and picking through the bones of their roster. And so they wanted Todd Gurley, who was the best player in fantasy at the time, for two mediocre running backs. And Bar Owl's argument
was, by the way, doesn't that, as a side note, really shows you how much football changes and how fast the names you just dropped involved in that trade. Like, everybody went quite wild. David Johnson for Todd Gurley. Like, that was 3 years ago. It may as well have been 19 years ago. Anyway, continue.
So it was crazy. So it's like, obviously, like, I got caught up in the cycle of violence where I was like, okay, you're trading with an 0-6 team. You're getting the best, because it's this, what makes it so analogous to what Simmons is doing, because I had the best team. I was going to win. And then the second best team added Todd Gurley and literally didn't give up anyone in their starting lineup. You just added Todd Gurley. And it was like Jamie and Powell worked together side by side. Powell's 0-6. I lost my mind like Simmons. And then it got very, personal, and I'm not good. I don't like conflict at all. And I'm not good at knowing when someone's trolling. Like, I'm like, I don't, I'm like, you, I, you, you're an like, and like, and they're like, no, he was kidding. I'm like, oh, he said I'm a terrible person. Is that a joke? I don't know. Like, anyway, so I lost my mind.
That's where I lose my mind every time.
No, when
your personal integrity is called into question over a stupid fan. They're like, well, this is what we're doing with each other.
And I'm like, and so I behaved reprehensibly. But the punchline is Todd Gurley immediately gets dinged. The Jennies are non-contenders. The trade is a wash. It was all for nothing, So this year, when the Dutch Mook at 2-6, trades you. And I think Simmons' reaction was based on Jahmyr Gibbs' breakout game, right? I mean, like, it's the Jahmyr Gibbs part of that people are overreacting to, right?
I guess, but it's also, the insinuation that I, to be honest with you, didn't immediately pick up on, what I reacted to was like, we're going after the Dutch Mook. Is he some sinister soul that I've missed, that he's trying to manipulate things behind the scenes? And it took me literally a day or two to realize, like, oh, it's a passive aggressive shot at me, that somehow I am trying to manipulate the Dutch Mook, who has larger matters in his life going on. And somehow I'm taking advantage of the poor guy. That's what's going on there.
The blame is always with the vulture who goes to.
I didn't do anything. The offer showed up. He texted me, hey, I just sent you an offer. I saw it. I was like, ooh, accept.
Yeah.
End of story.
Yeah. So obviously I was neutral on this one. First of all, because as Sal, I think, pointed out rightly, it's like, he's like, I would rather 2-6 teams do stuff to try than just don't pick up a kicker. Right. Because that happens in every league where you're like, wow, man, I really need this team to lose to make the playoffs. Oh, too bad they're playing a team that didn't start a kicker because they're out of it. Like, so Mook is trying, a Hail Mary to stay mathematically alive. So the first rage is like, oh no, Damashek has taken advantage of Mook. Very funny detail that Mook proposed that trade. But the other part, it's like, so it's Rashad White, who scores two touchdowns, beautiful. Brian Robinson, who also scores a touchdown. And then Michael Pittman, who has, I think, 60 yards receiving. Three guys on a bye: Ayuk, Gibbs, and Montgomery. And so everyone looks at the playing Sheck in the playoffs part of it, not the Mook trying to, keep his season going. But even even excusing the buy part, which is a pretty big part, you know, when what are we at? Eight. The guys you're getting are going to miss 20% of the rest of the season, right?
That's right.
But beyond that, you know, you're going to have the Montgomery Gibbs decision to make when they're both healthy. Like, they're not Priest Holmes and Larry Johnson where you can start both. Like, you know, you're going to be kicking yourself when Gibbs, you know, has 111 total yards, but Monty gets both touchdowns at the 1 yard line. First of all, I was wrong about Todd Gurley, and it wasn't even as egregious as Gurley. So I was like, I think I just sent my email saying, like, I'm always wrong about this, so I'm just going to keep my powder dry. But then people started going crazy about other trades that were even, like, more fair. Like, you know, I mean, the Trevor Lawrence on a bye for Derek Carr not on a bye, like, it was very weird. I mean, and I know some people think
that was a worse trade, obviously, in terms of, you know, fantasy points going forward. But my point is, no one asked anybody else, is it okay if we make this trade? This trying to back end a ruling because you don't like the deal is just loco crap to me.
The greatest part, and Ham and Mook were great on the pod, but the best part, like, it played like a joke, right? Simmons went crazy, you know, basically trying to, you know, rewrite the Constitution like the Ohio State Legislature to get the outcome he wanted. And then Jamie just produced the email where Simmons voted against. I voted for the league being able to veto trades. Like, the league should be able to go, that's out of line. And I was in the minority, and Simmons voted against the very thing he was trying to invoke.
Does everybody still love listening to other people talk about their fantasy teams and fantasy leagues, Eddie Spaghetti? How are we doing on that?
Well, luckily, I think that this week, I mean, it's a pretty popular league. It's been on the Manning Cast and mentioned the Manning Cast twice, I believe, and getting on, you know, John Hamm to talk about it was a pretty big deal. Jen Piacente weighed in with myself on Waiver Wire. So I feel like this has been the buzz of the week. You got a pass here. So but we have covered it at length already. So
all right, fine. On, so I'll do it.
Let me say this. Like, who did Tommy Pham slap or hit? What was that story?
I mean, it's like, Jock Peterson.
Jock Peterson, yeah.
Right. So it's like, it is wild. Oh, my former neighbor. So it is wild. Like, nobody wants to hear about your actual fantasy team. Like, hey, man, I got a lot of depth at wide receiver. Nobody cares about that part. Mm-hmm. Like,
I lost by 1.1. Yeah, nobody cares.
Yeah, bad beat. But like, if a professional baseball player is slapping another baseball player over a fantasy trade, yes, that is fair game. Everybody wants to hear that story. So we have not been reduced to blows, thankfully, in our fantasy league, but it's been a wild year. Obviously, starting on draft night, it's you know, and of course, all of it gets more embarrassing when you ask, you know, hey, how old are all these guys?
That's the point. I mean,
they're in their 50s.
I should move on because I'm a delicate flower, and it causes me such torment when these episodes happen, and I'm aware, like, this is just fantasy football, but also it ties me into knots. And then I think it's really going to be funny when we're 81. Let's keep going just for that. We're old already, but, you know, but 3-5 decades from now, way funnier.
The other thing that's wild about what's happening in our league right now is, like, I think, you know, people, you know, when Ham made the point, like, you know, doesn't Simmons have better things to do with this, you know, $200 million media empire? And it's like, well, a lot of times I've, you know, been guilty of fantasy negligence because I have been busy. Like, I just have been, like, too busy to, like, drill down or, like, go through other teams' rosters. Are you kidding me? Like, no way. And Simmons, and I know you don't like hearing about the other league, but he's going for it. This is his priority this year. He will go on hiatus from his media empire to win these two fantasy leagues. Like, he's sending out crazy trade proposals. You know, he's into it. So this is his priority this year, is winning these leagues. And it does make a difference when you're, like, paying attention. and you kind of count on certain people to be too busy. And then you're like, wow, if the busiest guy in our league is focusing on winning it, because there's quite a drought there.
Well, listen, the guy running multiple shows is pretty busy himself, Kevin Hench. And so good little recap, maybe a little long. I hope our listeners are still with us here. Send us an ear. That's a good test. Send us an ear. We're making an emergency call. The listeners know what I'm talking about there.
Well,
if you drop us an ear, we know you're still with us.
This would be a good poll. Which would you rather listen to? Hench and Sheck talk about their fairy tale football league or Sheck talk about hockey?
Well, you know, I do have to say, as we are now into our goat and goat fully here, that I thought for real, the Mook joining us, and we had some good conversation about Oregon and how they're going to get jammed up here. I think it's crazy. And I did check in with the resident Ducks whisperer, Jeff Schwartz, to confirm this after the conversation. But dig where the Final Four is tracking right now. There's a real chance that Bama will win out the way they're playing. And that includes beating Georgia in the SEC title game. If that happens and Texas wins out, Oregon could win out. And that would mean beating Washington in the title game, Pac-12 title game, which is a rematch. They could beat what would be the third or fourth ranked team, because Michigan and Ohio State are going to beat each other. And Georgia and Bama, one of those two teams, is going to take a loss head to head. So Washington will ascend by the time that conference game, will be the third or fourth best team. Oregon could beat that team and still get left out. It is wild stuff there. So shout out to him for taking the time to do it with his busy life. And Ham, I think, deserves a shout out as well, because one, I appreciated that he took the time to issue a formal apology for kicking me out of the league. I thought that was really nice of him to do that. And everybody has that on record now and will remember it for all the time.
I can't wait for my formal apology from you for kicking me out of the league. I didn't know that there were formal apologies afoot.
Well, okay, he didn't apologize for that. But you know what? So be it. I do think it's cool. You know, everybody loves that, the shine. People love the shine you get off of, like, yeah, I showed up, I'm the celebrity in the stands at that game. Like, I think it's pretty fun to listen. That's how I got to know him. So that's why I find it intriguing to hear a guy like, oh, he actually is living and dying with the St. Louis Blues. It's really neat that he can do deep dives on that. There aren't a lot of people who we run into who are really doing that on the level he is, which makes it fun to yap with him. So that was a good times. And we obviously were on the right side morally, you know, as men of justice and honor in this latest fantasy fiasco. And apparently you're on the wrong side, since you think it was a bad trade and think it should be undone.
I literally defended the trade.
Okay. I'm unclear on where everybody is on this.
And I was neutral.
Okay.
Because of my own bad behavior, I was like, you better keep your powder dry, Hench.
Okay. I have a good question for you, but a very quick one. The referee thing is just, it's insane. And it's this weird, you know, everybody does that metaphor about the frog boiling in water, but that the frog doesn't make a noise. Because it takes, we're doing it, but we know it's happening. We are the frog boiling, and we are emotionally boiling over too with rage, and we have nothing that we can do about it. And these guys only ascend higher up. And I say it's the NFL officials, but did you see Wednesday night's game? Arguably the best player of the millennium, Giannis, is out there, and he gets kicked out for staring for 0.3 seconds after a dunk at his opponent. He gets tossed from the game. I mean, I know people like to say it, but what are we doing? Nobody cares, official, about your morality. And I don't care if you explain, well, the league really wants us to make sure that we hold the players, that they toe the line on not doing that. What are we? You kicked out Giannis? Yeah. Do you think people paid? What if you paid $150 for a seat to be at that game and they just tossed Giannis because he stared at somebody for a second? Sheesh. Okay. That's my go-go. Like,
as I was watching the Clayton Tune, Brett Rypien, Tommy DeVito apocalypse of NFL football, like, it's like, you know, every team is playing a stiff. How many of those injuries were the result of a roughing the passer? Like, it's not, you're ruining the game with your roughing the passer call, and your rationale is we're keeping the quarterbacks healthy. Oh, of course you are, because look at all these awesome quarterbacks that are playing. Like, half the quarterbacks are hurt. You're ruining the game. You're not keeping the quarterbacks healthy. So your reason for these chicken roughing the passer calls has got to protect the quarterback, but they're getting hurt in a million other ways, you know, most commonly hitting their thumb on a helmet on a follow through. Like, it's like, so you have a bunch of terrible backup quarterbacks ruining the game in their way. And then you have the refs still ruining the game in their way. And we're boiling frogs, man. It's painful, but all right.
But right. In pain. That's the day. Like, we're all suffering. We've talked about this before, but the specific effect, as you jump in, sorry to interrupt you there, but just, it is the, like, the visceral joy in the, not like the moment. I don't mean like over the 10 or 15 minutes of like, we, can you believe we just won that game? I'm talking about, you know, in the split second, like, oh my God, he might go. He might go all the way. He's going to go. We did it. We went. Touchdown. Like, you can't feel, you now no longer feel that as fully as you did a generation ago, because you know, like, is there going to be some crappy like flag on the field? And you're waiting for that yellow thing to pop up at the bottom of your screen. And sometimes you get angry at the play-by-play guy because you saw a flag fly in and he's still calling it as though it's a live play. And you're like, hey, you missed the flag. There's a flag. They're going to bring this one back, and you know it. And the hands to the face and the illegal man downfield and those, you know, the unsatisfying nature of the calls that are, you know, 25 yards away from an impact. Gene Steratore goes on a Pittsburgh radio show, WDV. I go on every week too with Randy Bauman and Bill Crawford, and he's on there. And he said, you have to, he counsels current officials. Obviously, we all know Gene Steratore at this point, but he counsels them. He's like, don't make the calls that you can make. Make the calls you need to make. And it's absolutely right. I think that says it all. It gets it exactly.
Hallelujah.
Right.
Hallelujah. You know, these guys calling illegal contact, you know, away from the play as the quarterback's getting sacked. Just keep your powder dry for a second. You wait a second and you'll go, no impact on the play. Like, you know, it's wild, you know, what an epidemic it is. And as you mentioned that, it's like, we all got to the point on all punt returns where you really had to keep, you're like, well, you know, the play-by-play guy has to yell no flags before the guy's in the end zone. Like, that becomes, once, like, the, you know, the Charger Davis, like, once you hit the seam, the play-by-play guy has to scan the field for flags, because you need to know no flags. Then you can let your body have the sensation of celebrating a touchdown. Now, the QB, your defense gets a stop on third and 11. Great breakup by the DB at the marker, but you can't feel anything because you have to wait to see if roughing, like, every third down, you're like, was roughing called? There are even times, because obviously they have to follow the ball, and you're like, ah, my guy was closing it. Like, you're bummed that you know your defensive end was so close to the quarterback, he probably hit him. So now you're in this emotional coin flip. You know what it is? You know what it's like? I've been lucky to never be on antidepressants, but I've heard from dear friends that Prozac specifically, maybe others, that they keep you from getting too high or too low. Like, they keep you in a nice even keel. But one of the highs that it inhibits is ejaculation. Oh, terrific. Terrific. That's that's not something I look forward to at all. So that's no problem.
It seems severe. I didn't know that's what was going on.
We're going to stay right down here in this gray area with
nothing. Let's all become robots. That will be better if we just all turn in.
Nothing to look forward to ever. Okay, great. So that's what this officiating crisis is reducing us to, where we're like, don't get too high.
You're so right.
You're like, you can never. And then And then you get the little like the unsatisfying like ejaculation of like, oh, the call's upheld. You know, it's 7 minutes later.
Well, that extra layer is absolutely right, too. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago. It was only like 3 years or so ago where that was our fixation, was it takes too long, the review process, which, of course, still stands. If you're watching the game and they spin those highlights, like, let's see what happened on here. Within literally 7 seconds, you're watching it. If you're an informed fan, you're like, oh, well, the ball did hit the ground and let's move on. And for some reason, it takes these guys 11 more minutes of our lives to then arrive at the conclusion we all knew was coming anyway. The other thing is quickly, the other great rule from Steratory that is on a human level, that it doesn't get lost in some, you know, pseudo legalese, is the guy, the pass rusher, is he giving the QB the business or is he not giving him the business? It's exactly right. The way those two phrases, everybody understands them. Even though they're vaguely ambiguous in terms of language, you know exactly what that is. That's the standard. Is he giving them the business or is he not? And make the calls you have to make.
Was it Chargers? You know, like we're all so PTSD'd at this point from roughing the passer, but like there, I think it was one of the Charger sacks of Zach Wilson where they ragdolled him, like they took him and wound up and whipped him to the ground. And I'm like, oh, that's definitely a penalty. The guy's standing right there. And it's like, nope, not that time. Like it's the inconsistency is maddening.
Well, and I like superstars getting the benefit of the doubt. So like some strike zone stuff I can be kind of loose with. I definitely like a superstar in the NBA getting some latitude there. If you're a high-end goal star. If you're a goal scorer and you know how to you know how to feel that stick and take advantage of it, I'm fairly loose on all that kind of stuff. But the like, oh, that's a good QB. He gets that call, and the bad QBs don't. It's like, well, what the hell is that standard? That's a really weird standard. It has nothing
for
to do with
sure. Skill. Yeah,
you're allowed to bizarre. Do,
if I can just,
do, it's basically like you're allowed to do it to Zach Wilson. Well, why? Because we don't care if he gets hurt.
Whoever we put in behind him is going to be the same guy. Anyway.
Like the league has sent out a memo. Yeah, these guys can get hurt. No problem.
I know we're belaboring this point. Everyone, I think, is on our side. But it's you know, this is like the thing I texted you guys. This is like 2 weeks ago now at this point. But like, I don't blame the refs. I blame the NFL because the NFL wanted to be this way because NFL will review this in the offseason. They will say, no, oh, these are the right calls. This is how we want the league to be officiated. There was nothing they would change. They did it last year, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of plays. They reviewed. They said, I believe it was three. They said three they would have changed. That's not true. We know that there was way more than three plays that were bad. But that Monday Night Football game a couple weeks back where Buck and Aikman were like, oh, it's a bad call. I forget who does the in-booth referee who also agreed with them. And the NFL impromptu was like, no, get the VP of officiating on the Monday Night Football broadcast to then say why that was actually the right call. And he like changed the rules of intentional grounding on air that never happened in the history of the NFL. And if the fact of like the NFL is going to now put their league guys on broadcast to be like to carry water and be like, no, this is actually why this should be called, like we're going to lose. Like we already lost and it's not going to get any better if they're doubling down on themselves. So I just think like we're in some scary times here with the fishing.
Oh, it is. It's very Orwellian. It's 1984 when the party, the overlord comes on your TV to tell you, you can't believe your eyes. You can't believe your eyes. 2 + 2 = 5. That was not grounding. That was roughing the passer. You're like, you can't gaslight me. I know how football is supposed to be played. You can't.
Well, exactly kind of what the point you're making there is like, if it's like, is your burger a little bit better if you put a nice piece of Swiss on it? Don't ask cheese. Cheese is probably going to be like, yeah, it is better. Everything's better with a little bit of me on it. Of course, who are you asking that they're going to validate their people? What are we doing? I love the school marms out there in the public who I'll be like, that was a terrible call. And then the next day they'll say like league officials looked at it and they said it was a perfectly fine call. So you can't give a whose side are you on, you weirdo?
This was wild. And it's like, I know most of the time, NFL quarterbacks are working while NFL football is being played. But, you know, one of the ones I've had it in for. It's just insane that we still live in a society where this is called over and over and over again. Obviously, I believe cost the Patriots a Super Bowl, safety in the first quarter, a safety because Brady threw the ball right down the middle of the field and the receiver ran an outbreaking route when he thought he was going to run an inbreaking route. And they were like, that's grounding. It's the officials don't know. Like, he's obviously throwing the ball to a spot where he believes the receiver is going to go. And, you know, by the way, some of those.
I know exactly the play you're talking about. You know, right?
So then Josh Allen says after the game, I've never seen that call. You do have a bye week. Do you ever watch football? They call it all the time. I've never seen that call. I'm like, did you not watch the second Patriots Giants Super Bowl? Do you not watch football? Like, this is one of those terrible calls where guys who apparently know nothing about football go, wow, he threw the ball so far beyond the receiver that slammed on the brakes. It's like, yeah, he thought Gabe Davis was running a fly. You can't wait as the quarterback to confirm that. I mean, all of these passes are thrown based on where the guy is going to go. And then they call grounding. It's insane.
It's all terrible. You know what? You made it through your goat and goats, though. See, another.
I haven't
started. You haven't. Oh, I thought you were finished. Maybe it's coming now. I was about to praise you for maturity. Go ahead.
You know what it is? Because we go so fast on the pregame 15-minuter that I like to luxuriate when we have some time. You know?
I see. Please, have at it.
We got to get the entire outback mowed in Australia. We got to go long, man. This guy's mowing. So, okay, honorable mention, bad goat, real quick, because we'll have many, many opportunities to revisit it throughout the season. James Harden is the gift that keeps on giving. Like, first of all, why there's any demand for this guy, you know, he led the league in assists last year and is selfish. Like, it's the weirdest thing. Like, it makes no sense. Like, he's the most generous player in the league. He led the league in assists. I don't get it. I don't understand it. He comes to the Clippers. He's played two games. By the way, his numbers aren't bad. His first game, he's 6-for-9 with only 2 turnovers, but he's minus 18 when he's on the court. They lose to the lowly Knicks. Second game, he's minus 15 when he's on the court. They lose to the Nets, who are under 500 going into that game. So he's played two games. They've lost to two crappy teams, and he's minus 33. Congratulations, Clippers, on getting the 2016 All-Stars together. Like, how is this going to work?
It's funny because I think you go a little bit further back in Clippers history. I think he's Corey Maggette 2.0, except more marketable, maybe because he has that beard or something. I don't know what it is that seduces teams. And I really hate to be, you know, sincerely, I wonder if a team like the Clippers gets a guy like that in the name of, like, bet you will sell more tickets. You know, I mean, but at this point, you feel like they should feel like we have a shot. We can get this done. And they consider, so it's not a marketing ploy. They actually thought about this. These professional basketball people are like, yes, we get closer to the title with James Harden. It's like, there's no evidence of that, man. I don't know what you've been watching.
In fact, if you've been watching the NBA, look at the addition by subtraction that's going on in Philly. Everyone playing better in Philly. Sixers look great. They're happy. It's what we thought was happening with Jordan Love briefly.
Hey, good news, Clippers fans, if there are any of them out there. There are a couple dozen at least. Good news is James Harden will want out in the next
three weeks
to feel 5 betrayed. As much.
So. He's going to feel betrayed. Ty Lue lied to me.
So you can look forward to that.
He's the bad goat anytime we want to go there. But, you know, we were talking in our little pre-production meeting about Dak Prescott. And, you know, I went 8-5 last week, or 9-5 if you count the Thursday game. But I'm so pissed that that Cowboys +3 didn't come in. I really thought the Cowboys would play him even, and they did. And so I'm going to do my bad goat and my good goat sort of as a package. Dak Prescott has 27 seconds from the 6-yard line. So you've got 4 plays from the 6 to win the game. CJ Stroud has 46 seconds from his own 25-yard line. It takes him four plays, chunk, 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 to beat the Bucks. You know, in like a, everyone's been like impressed, the 14-1 TD to interception ratio, the record for most passes to start a career without an interception. But like those four plays, it was like, they were just plays. Like there was nothing weird. There was no tip. There was no Hail Mary. He just went blam, like big chunk, big chunk, big chunk, touchdown. And was so poised and like such the real deal. And I know we said on this podcast, we've talked about it. We were in Vegas when Lovie Smith cost the Texans the first overall pick. We were freaking out. And now I think Lovie Smith should go in the Texans ring of honor for winning that game, because it really saved them what Carolina is going through.
So true.
With their, you know, the lowest ranked QB, the tiny, tiny, tiny Bryce Young versus the 6'3", 220 CJ Stroud, who, as we said on this podcast, if you looked at his performance versus that Georgia defense, those guys are the NFL defenders.
We did cover it. Yeah, pat ourselves not, on the back.
We can't say it's not a surprise, because the numbers are unbelievable. But anyway, going back to Dak, 6-yard line, 27 seconds. You know, I'm watching with a group of degenerates. None of us think they're going to win the game. None of us think they're going to win the game. He's going to Dak it up. He's going to Dak it up. And he did. And by the way, you still would have gone to OT if he hadn't already Dacked it up. By how do you, if your goal was to get out of bounds to stop the clock, like when he's rolling out for that 2-point conversion, you know, and he's being chased, is it Fletcher Cox or Brandon Graham? You know, he's being chased by a lineman. And obviously Dak is not as athletic as he used to be with the 40 pounds of tattoo ink on his leg, but it's like harder to get out of bounds than to convert the 2-point conversion. How did you get your foot out?
You're reminding me of George Pickens trying to get his foot down in the end zone on Thursday night. Please, back
George
to it.
George Pickens extending to get out of bounds. Like, you're like, Dak, is your spatial relations ability, like, you didn't think you had to turn the shoulders upfield? Like, do you so want to avoid contact? You ran out of bounds when you needed to get to the pylon, and at some point you got to turn your shoulders and get upfield. When I saw that replay, you know, because live, I was like, he's in, obviously. He can see the sideline and the pylon. How drunk would you have to be to step out of bounds before you get the ball across the
pylon? It is crazy. And by the way, I didn't see that one live, but I did know Pickens was out of bounds. And I'm like, why are they carrying on with the celebrations? And Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit as excited as they can possibly get. We're relatively excited and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, this play is coming back. Is anyone going to acknowledge that his foot was plainly out of bounds? So I'm talking about the anticlimactic vibes, but anyway.
So then Dak's it up on the 2-point conversion. Now Dak's got, okay, you got 27 seconds, four plays, obviously, to get it in the end zone from the 6. And, you know, I mean, CeeDee Lamb, top 3 crossing patterns. Like, I mean, that guy runs shallow crosses. You can't stay with him. He's great in traffic. Like, you know, you should win this game. So the first thing that happens is, like, why are we up against it with the clock? Like, why is this the NFL play clock is an eternity. Like, let's go. So they're out of sorts, you know, and that's like, that's leadership. That's, you know, it's like, let's get to the line and everything's going to be very comfortable. And so the left guard wiggles and flinches, which, and I didn't hear any explanation of this. Dak runs a QB draw. Like, obviously Cowboys saved by the false start, because Dak is going to, you get four plays from the 6, unless you run a QB draw on first down, like, whip it over the goalpost. Like, if you think the play is blown up, but don't do the Jamie Foxx any given Sunday, I'm going to scramble. Like, that's the one thing you can't do is, as Spaghetti knows, the Tyrod Taylor, I'm going to check to a run. It's the only way you won't get four plays from the 6. So Dak is trying to Dak it up. Like, he's already made a flustered, terrible decision, but he's saved by the false start. And it's like, don't worry, Dak's like, I got this. Obviously, you can't take a sack. Obviously, you can't take a sack. I mean, these quarterbacks, you should be in pitchy, pitchy, woo, woo mode. Like, the thing that can't happen is you get tackled with the ball. Just throw a hook shot into the middle of the field. Like, nothing is as bad as you getting tackled with the ball. And Dak, zero clock in his head, no sense that they maybe are getting close. The sack, now we're in Hail Mary territory. Like, they should have had four plays from the six. They end up with three plays. Like, it's so terrible. So Dak's my bad goat. You know, I don't think, and I'll ask you guys, we're suspended over a pit of fire, and you got to get their answer right or you get plunged into the flames. Does Dak Prescott win a Super Bowl? No way. No way.
No. Well, I mean, he's also up against history at this point. As I like to point out, the guys who play in the Super Bowls this millennium are on their rookie deals, the real deal QB, but still on his. So the future, in other words, may be bright down Houston way rather than Dallas, several miles away there. I'm with you that they probably are not going to get over the hump because there is something recurring with Dak Prescott in these big moments. And yet, everybody around him is like, he is a leader of men. Everybody wants a win for him, charismatic, and the numbers are there over the course of his career. It is strange. Quick question on that. Then, if you traded Dak for Jalen Hurts, is everything the same? Because, by the way, we said on the 15-minute show last week, I showed you the records for both teams. If the Cowboys just survive that game and are a half game back, the Eagles have a gauntlet. I mean, they have like three of the five best teams in football upcoming, and the Cowboys have a breeze. They really could have taken over the division and never let up, but now here we are. I'll say you, I'm curious, Hench.
Well, Dak, it's wild, right? Because, you know, a lot of smart people, people got together. I think most people, you know, said you should take Bryce Young over CJ Stroud, right? The people whose job it is to know this, you know, the consensus was take the Smurf over this guy. And they've all been proven wrong. I've seen enough, right? Stroud is unbelievable. I mean, he's just throwing ropes on, like, you know, deep crosses, like every throw.
Money too.
If you watched if you watched Hurts and Prescott, it's like, to your point about the trade, scouting combine, okay, we want to watch you guys make all the throws. You would definitely take Dak. You would take Dak. Like, Hurts still has that weird throwing motion you mentioned in our pre-production meeting. And, but, you know, so it's like Dak throws a lovely ball, like just a beautiful ball. But Dak no longer that athletic, as stepping out of bounds on the two-point conversion showed. And Hurts, I think he's dinged. Like, he's not as crazily athletic as he seemed last year, but Eagles should have lost both games to the Commies. Like, he's got a weird winner thing going on where if you put Hurts on the Cowboys with the exact same roster at the 6-yard line with 27 seconds left, first and goal, I think Hurts wins that game.
I guess you're right about that, because I would push back on that. And so much of it has to do in Philly, you know, for the last decade, not just with Jalen Hurts, with that offensive line up front. But I think you're right. When you put it in that context, I do think Jalen Hurts would house that ball with his legs in all likelihood. So, yeah, maybe you're onto something there. All right. Interesting stuff. Eddie Spaghetti, it's your turn. Goat and goat.
Yeah, I'll start off with my good goat here. And this is just more of a farewell. It's a goodbye. It's an honorary good goat. It's going to be Daniel Jones. Last time we've ever seen him as a Giants fan. Look, the guy from the draft in Czech, we were there, took the famous picture with him, drafted him when you had Eli Manning on the roster right after picking up the option to keep Eli Manning, give him a contract for that next year. So right off the bat, I mean, this guy, people were saying, why are you taking him? He goes to a basketball school. And he was a guy that was supposed to play football at Princeton. And then luckily the last minute, you know, Duke said, come over here. And everyone you talk to, you know, Cutcliffe, especially, who's the famous, you know, quarterback guru and was coach there. The guy just been a workhorse and a gym rat and just a student of the game, you know, since his college days through his pro days. And it's just easy to root for a guy and the age of like the social media and the kind of me first athletes, like just somebody who does not say a peep and keeps to himself. And I love that about him. And going through the Shermer experiment into Joe Judge, and then obviously now with Daboll and Kafka, just year after year, new coach, new offense, new system. We try to draft players to help him, like a Kadarius Toney. That doesn't work out. We try to draft offensive linemen like Evan Neal to help him out. That doesn't work. Just nothing ever goes right for this guy. And the one year that it kind of did, you know, making the playoffs last year, winning a road playoff game versus the Vikings, he still did that with like the top three receivers, all like Wandale Robinson, Sterling Shepard, all injured. They try to bring in Darren Waller. He gets injured again. Like, just nothing ever goes right for this guy. And seeing that play where he kind of, I guess, tripped over his own guy when Max Crosby was like rushing him, and then something happened. You could tell that it was off. And then when he just drops back, tries to plant his right foot, and it just collapses. I just felt sick. I felt terrible for the guy because he does not deserve this. And to me, he is like the quintessential like ghost of the Patriots and Belichick, and his like final hurrah will coach him up to be like a perennial playoff quarterback. And I hope it does happen because the Giants, and you know, it was the best case scenario for all parties, him getting injured, you know, especially when they have that contract, he will cost like $22 million against the cap and dead money, which is whatever, you had to pay him. And his contract is not what people think. He's not getting paid $40 million a year. And that contract for quarterbacks will be pretty middle of the road by next season anyway. But it just makes the most sense because this is how Daboll and Shane extend their careers as Giants. Because if you attach yourself to a new quarterback, you're going to get 2-3 years anyway. So they're going to go take a quarterback and they'll unfortunately move on from him. And it just has to happen. This era of Giants football is disgusting. It's a disgrace. And it needs a whole new fresh face. So this is my my farewell to Daniel Jones there.
Kind of nice. I gotta say
real quick, because I, you know, Spaghetti and I are in the same garage on Danny Dimes. I just think he's good. And I don't think, you know, he's ever had enough around him. And like Spaghetti pointed out, like, you know, he won a road playoff game with nothing around him. Like, it's like but if this is the swan song, which I think Spaghetti's right about, like, it's like, it says so much about this guy and who he is. When you think of the licks that he has taken, like that opening night against the Cowboys, just getting blasted play after play. And, you know, not screaming at receivers for not getting open or anything. It's just like back in the huddle, get blasted, like so tough. And then we got to assume he tore his ACL on the play before, right?
Yeah,
He tears his ACL and he's like, huddle up, let's go. And it's not until, you know, he's got to be in a lot of pain, but he's used to being in pain after a Giants offensive play because he gets blasted on every play. He tears his ACL and he goes, huddle up. And then he's like, oh, I can't put any weight on my leg. That is like, that's a different kind of badge of honor, like for that guy. So I'm with Spaghetti, man. I like him. I think he is a winner and I hope he finds the right situation.
It's funny, Eddie Spaghetti sort of personifies what it is to be a quarterback in New York City and that pressure cooker. I was at the draft, as he said, Spaghetti and Spaghetti's brother and I in the same room waiting for all the first round draft picks to come so we can kibitz with them. And when you could hear the stage nearby, they announced the New York Giants select Daniel Dimes, Duke, and Eddie Spaghetti and his brother MF'd it up, but good. And how could they do this? And 25 minutes later, Danny Dimes is in there and I'm taking a picture of the two of them, or somebody's taking a picture of the two of them. And I'm like, Spaghetti, tell them what you said. Tell them what you said 20 minutes ago and all of that. And this is what he won over about as tough a town you can win over. I think people, Giants fans, largely embrace this guy. I do think it's over for him. Real quick, though, Spaghetti, as a fan of the Giants, you say you hope he goes somewhere and thrives. What if it's in Washington? Will you be happy for him then?
You know, it's kind of like, I want to see him thrive and be successful. It's kind of like the same thing when I see Ranger players go other places and they, you know, I'm trying to think of guys like Brady Shea or JT Miller. And I'm like, all right, they're doing better. It's OK. I don't hate them. I will never hate him, even if he goes to a rival, because I do think he has the potential to be good. I mean, I'm not a Patriots lover, but I said, like, I think the Patriots would make a ton of sense for him to go there. The Commanders.
Yeah, but if he's beating you twice a season, it'll take on a different look altogether. If it's in your division, you're like, I'm not so happy for this guy anymore.
It'll show the failures of the organization, which I don't see turning around anytime soon anyway. So, I mean, yeah, it'll another reason for me not to watch football on Sunday. So I'm fine with that.
All right, let's go. Give us another one here.
Bad go really quick. I texted you guys about the Miami Heat court. I think it got overtaken. Just go give it a Google. Look at how insane it is. The quote, like, hardest working, most professional, whatever. It's an insane thing that he did for this in-season tournament. But the real bad go to the week, and I'm positive that Hench saw this one, is probably salivating for me to bring it up, was the Brian Cashman sunglasses, pink golf shirt, crossed arms, cursing at the media. I believe they were in Scottsdale. Just some great quotes he said, starting with, he ended with blaming injuries. So that's always a good one, saying that we would have been good, but we had injuries. So that's great. He says, you know, you're not supposed to be an excuse, but it really is. Then he goes and says and lies that they actually have the smallest analytics department. The Yankees are not run by analytics. When we just saw Aaron Judge say publicly, like a couple of weeks ago, saying that when he won the Roberto Clemente Award, like, that not everything is in place. Everything shouldn't be done strictly by analytics. It should be more of a feel thing. So he's like basically combating Aaron Judge. He said that he's proud of his guys and that we're pretty effing good. You won, 82 games last year, and you've been going further and further away from a World Series since 2017. He goes and argues about the players he brought in, like with Gallo and Sonny Gray, and says, like, look how good they've been, or look how what teams picked them up after, playoff team, and he's in the Cy Young competition. Just like one of the strangest, like, not understanding how he looks outwardly while he's doing this, when everyone in New York hates him, and his just lack of perspective and this hubris that he has is just uncanny. And this is going to be a hell of an offseason for the Yankees, because now you have Cashman, who's hated by fans. This is by far the most contentious it's ever been. And the Yankees are they were a game away from being under 500. So this is one of the, like, again, this will be the strangest Yankees offseason in quite some time.
He's the Vivek Ramaswamy of baseball GMs. Like, everybody hates him. The first 0% approval rating we've ever seen. A couple of those quotes, you're right, Spaghetti. I was loving it. First of all, you know, as a Yankee hater, I'm like, oh, good. He thinks there's nothing wrong. Carry on. Great, 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 great. And he was like, he had a line like, I like where we are in the process, like something about how well the process is going. But I hope he took a moment as a classy guy to congratulate Jordan Montgomery on his World Series title, because they traded him for Harrison Bader, who they then released. Well done. Well done. Wow. Yeah. Cashman, yeah. You know, you've socked enough money away. Why don't you take the high road and resign?
That's what it's going to be like when you watch Danny Dimes lifting the Lombardi for another team, Spaghetti. That's kind of like that. And now a quick break. All right, best bets, here we go. I say Penn State. People are excited about this one. Now, asterisk goes next to this one. If Jim Harbaugh, between the time of this recording and Saturday's kickoff, gets suspended, I might change my opinion. As it is, Michigan will not be distracted. They understand the stakes here. They will go in to Happy Valley and leave with a victory by a touchdown or more. Lay the 5.5 for the road team there. I know a lot of people are going to be tempted by what we've seen for Utah, their knuckleball effect on high-end Pac-12 offenses. I think the 9.5 for the Huskies at home isn't enough. I say double-digit victories for Michael Penix and company there, and I love to just track. I don't have we gave our pick on the 15-minute show that you'll have on Friday. I don't know how I feel about the 16.5 that Tommy DeVito and the Giants are getting against Dak and company, but it's a fascinating number. Historically, it's tracking towards the top 10 biggest spreads in regular season NFL Super Bowl era history. And if you look at the math for what it matters, the teams don't generally cover those massive numbers. So you might want to take the Giants, but I can't do it because it's Tommy DeVito. What the hell are we doing? Hench, how say you?
Well, I've got some thoughts on DeVito I'll end with. But first, I love the Niners to get right against the Jags. I think that they win by more than a field goal. I love your Steelers also to cover against the Packers. I think that the Packers have a lot of trouble scoring against not very good defenses. And I think that
you just described the Steelers.
Yeah, true.
What makes you confident in that?
I like the Steelers in a semi romp. And then my favorite bet is Tommy DeVito. Cowboys favored by 16.5 as of this recording. Over under is 39, which I guess puts the Giants over under at 11.5.
That's the fun bet.
Under 11.5. This means they're going to have to score a touchdown in the red zone at some point. Not a chance. Like, you can't. Saquon is going to get hit in the backfield as he often did, even when you had a decent quarterback. But they're going to have 10 guys in the box, and it's going to be ugly. I don't know that the Cowboys will put up the 40 that they did opening week, but man, the Giants are not going
to. That's a smart play. I wish I would have thought of that. That's the way to do it. You're talking about, they get a touchdown. They get a turnover. Dak threw a bad ball and they kick a field goal out of it. And somehow maybe Saquon break. Maybe there's a deflected pass and they run it into the end zone. Still under the 11. So 11. And a, yeah, that's a great play. I love that one. Spaghetti, how say you?
Great slate of games this weekend in college football. A lot of tight matchups. So, but if I had to give one that I'm leaning towards, not a best bet, it would be the Oregon to cover versus USC. I think Oregon is a supremely complete team. This game I wish was a lot better than it's going to be. You have Caleb Williams now like crying in the stands and saying he wants to like cuddle and watch movies. I think they're going to get blown out. Their defense is just miserable. So that is the one lean in college and giving. But I got to give some NHL stuff out. And this is like an apology. I don't know how I'm wearing a Rangers hat. I don't know how I have not given this out in the, you know, the 2 or 3 weeks since the NHL season started, but the Breadman, Artemi Panarin, shaved his hair and has registered a point in every single contest this season for the Rangers. He's third in the NHL in points with 20. So I believe on Caesars right now, it's minus 165 for an assist, plus 145 for a goal. But if you want to just bet him to score a point, I'm sure you can do that as well. And then this doesn't have to, you know, be said again, but just keep, I know this San Jose just won, they beat the Flyers, but continue to bet against San Jose. And this one is only going to last for a little bit of time until Nico Hischier comes back. But the New Jersey Devils, you know, obviously Jack Hughes is going to be out week to week. I've heard what they said, the team said, but Nico Hischier is still day to day. They are playing Washington tomorrow. They have a game Tuesday versus Winnipeg. If Hischier and Hughes are out, bet against the New Jersey Devils because they're just not that good with those two players, especially 5-on-5. So those are little trends I'm trying to give you. And my mistake again for not giving out Breadman to score a point every single game.
I've always said, and I've been consistent on this, I prefer my bread hairless. That's a rule I live by. Hey, great times. Kevin Hench, always appreciate you taking the time. We appreciate all the notes that praise Hench, even the ones that maybe are on the other side of things. Send us an ear. Shout out to Nick Stupakis, who dropped me a line with a very lovely note about my old man. We appreciate that. Shout out to our guy Sully. Congratulations on the nuptials last weekend with Eddie Spaghetti and Kent Brown watching on from the side there. And thanks to you, the listener. Go back and listen to all the great stuff that we've put out this week on the Extra Points Network. Subscribe to the Extra Points channel on YouTube. Great podcast to start the week on -3 with the Dutch Mook and John Hamm. Great episode with Sarah Tiana and Steve Byrne, who said hello to you, Kevin Hench, on Extra Points on Wednesday. And with that being said, we'll talk to you after NFL Week 10, before NFL Week 11, to break it all down for you. Until then, thanks so much, sports fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven